Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I'm so excited to be here. I really can't think of a conference where I would rather speak than at La Leche League. This is an incredible excitement because all of you, like me, are involved both in meeting your children's needs and in absolute social transformation. Do you see it that way? Okay, let me start by asking you, why are you members of La Leche League? Would you just raise your hand? I'm going to repeat the answer so you don't need to come up here. Yes?
To give back.
Okay, to give back.
Support.
Support. Sure, thank you. Why else? Yes?
To learn. Because I really believe in that mother-baby connection.
Okay, believing in the mother-baby connection. Yes?
To be with a community of like-minded people.
To be with a community of like-minded people.
Because I support breastfeeding.
Okay, supporting breastfeeding. What else? Yes?
Long support validation.
Validation for the breastfeeding work. Yes. Okay, yes. Okay, to improve your own mothering. Anything else? Yes?
Advocacy.
Okay, to reach more people. Yes?
I see the social justice.
Social justice. Okay, so there's a couple of themes that I'm picking up here. One of them has to do with the individual needs that we have for support, for validation, for encouragement, for learning. And then another set of needs, which is about contribution to the greater good, reaching more people, giving back. And all of these are, all of you heard Marshall last night? Okay, so all of these are the kinds of needs that we're talking about. When we try to identify what are our real needs, not what do we feel like, what do we want, but what are our core, deepest human needs? These are the kinds of things that we come up with. And these things cut across culture, across language, across race, across genders. All of us have the same basic needs that motivate all of our actions. So if you look for a moment, where? Right here, at the key principles of NVC, there's a few that I noted here, and there are more in your handout. One of them, that all of us have the same needs. No human being is different from another in our needs. We have many different expressions of those needs. One person has a need for play that expresses itself by running a marathon every 3 weeks. And another person has a need for play that expresses itself by playing with children on a regular basis, by working with them. There's many different expressions, but the need is the same. Another core principle is that everyone's needs matter. Not mine more than yours, or yours more than mine. This is one of the greatest challenges, I believe, for parents, because it's very easy as a parent to fall either into the paradigm where I matter more, I get to say, we do it because I say so and it's my needs that matter, or your needs and I'm just a doormat. And neither one of them actually nurtures the kind of connection that we're looking for if we want to have a peaceful world. Because in a peaceful world, all of our needs have got to matter. Otherwise, we don't ultimately have peace. So all of our needs matter. And the bottom one here, that every action is an attempt to meet a human need. Every single action. So how is my child my greatest teacher? The moments that he is my greatest teacher are not the moments when he is peaceful. Those are delightful. And I do learn from them. But the deepest learning is at the moment where he will strike out. Then I face myself. Who am I? How do I want to be? What kind of a parent do I want to be? What kind of a human being? What do I want for him, really? And what do I want for our family? And what do I want for our world? In the time that we have together, the way that I planned it is extremely interactive. I do want to talk some because I want to teach you something, but I also want you to experience what I'm talking about. So in the handout, there are numerous activities. Don't look at them yet. We'll get to them very, very shortly. I want to highlight a couple of more principles, and then we'll get more into the activities. Just one moment. Okay, the third principle right here is the idea of choice. And Marshall talked about that at some length yesterday. But I want to highlight this particular one because it is so different from how we think about life. The minute we become parents, in particular, we think that we have just lost some choices. There are now a number of things we have to do. The minute a child is born, we think that child has things that she or he has to do. And much of the joy of life is lost when we think we have to do things. I like to ask people, would you raise your hand if you enjoy doing things because you have to? Just raise your hand. Nobody. And yet our entire parenting paradigm and teaching and education paradigms are both based on this idea that we should make children do certain things. Not only that, that it is good for them. So there's a mismatch that is like air. We don't even notice it. That none of us like it, and yet we think children should learn to do things they have to do. And so what we're looking at is very much how do we parent? How do we relate in a way that encourages that desire to give? I want to share with you a brief story that happened when my son was 3 years old. His grandparents were staying in a room downstairs, and at 8 o'clock in the morning, he's banging a pole on the ground. Okay, what's a parent to do? Anybody? What's a parent to do?
Distract.
Distract, okay. Distract. What else? Are you supposed to let the child bang the pole on the ground? No. Here's one have to. Parents do not let their children bang over the grandparents' heads. Luckily, we have MVC experience in our family. And so he's used to a dialogue approach. And so I turned to him and I said, sweetie, I'm worried about your grandparents. I'd like them to be able to rest as long as they would like. Would you be willing to bang on the couch or to stop banging? And he said, I don't want to, but I'm willing. I said, how come you don't want to? And he said, it's not waking me up. And I love that. It's funny, but it's also really profound. Mm-hmm. It's the self-interest part of our human nature. We want to do things that matter to us. Yes?
What if he said no? Okay, go ahead. What if he said no?
I'll get to that in a minute. What if he said no is the $1 million question, isn't it? So I said, and how come you're willing? And he said, because I want to be considerate of you. And I'm very happy with that answer because he was relaxed when he stopped banging. We didn't have a power struggle. There was no tantrum. There was nobody feeling bad at the end of it. And the reason he did it was out of connection, out of a desire for consideration. Now, I firmly believe that that desire to contribute gets eroded if he had thought that he should or that there would be a negative consequence if he said no. If we think there's going to be a consequence to saying no, how could we say no? How could we say yes? Excuse me. How could we say yes and really enjoy saying yes? So this is a great pleasure that we get to have when we take coercion out of the paradigm. Okay, what happened if he said no? We're going to get to in about half an hour of this program because I'm going to have you all practice with that, actually. So let me introduce the handout. Does everybody have one? Okay. If there's extra... Okay, there. Okay, you see at the very front is what I call a quick reference guide, which is the summary of MVC language in just a few paragraphs, really. But MVC language is not the heart of MVC. A lot of parents, how many of you have toddlers? Would you raise your hand? Okay. A lot of parents with toddlers say, well, when can I start this? After my child speaks, right? No, you can start this before your child is born. Because just like attachment parenting really starts at the very beginning, nursing the baby, you think about it before you give birth. Any process of preparing for a child can start before the child is even born. And much of nonviolent communication is completely nonverbal. It's really about what we do with our heart. It's how we recondition our heart to open in the face of conflict instead of to shut down. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. So it's not about language, but the language is important. In the same way that Buddhism is not about meditation. Meditation is a practice that helps Buddhist practitioners come to embody the principles that they're wanting to embody spiritually. And in the same way, the language of NVC is a way to embody spiritual principles that underlie this process. So I want to describe a little bit of the language to you. We make four critical distinctions in nonviolent communication. The first one is between observations and interpretations or judgments. Why is this important? Why does it matter? Why shouldn't we just keep on judging and interpreting?
Reaction.
Okay, we react. We have a very strong reaction when we make a judgment or an interpretation. That's one reason. The second is, when we are making judgments and interpretations, we are not usually distinguishing between them and the reality in front of us. We think they're the same. We're human beings, and by nature we're going to interpret. I'm just remembering that I meant to ask about language and I forgot. I'm going to pause for a minute and check. Is there anybody here who speaks English as a second language who would like me to slow down a little bit? Should I slow down? No? Yes? A little bit?
Yeah.
A little bit? Okay, is there someone who can help with what language? Would a translation be helpful to anyone? No. Okay. Okay, when we are able to look at the world, knowing that we're human beings and we make interpretations, and that's an important part of what it means to be human, but we're able to distinguish between the interpretation and what's actually happening. They're two different things. When we're able to make that distinction, then we begin to get choice about how we react to things. So the first step is being able to make that distinction. Another reason why it's so important to make that distinction is because most of the time our communication in conflict situations, and even not, goes from judgment to demand. I'm judging what's going on, and then I make a demand in relation to it. And I completely miss the heart, which is the feelings and the needs. That's where the heart of connection is, has the potential to happen. And so if I'm judging, the other person listening to me is going to hear the judgment, and they're going to react. I just lost the opportunity to connect with them. And so I want the observation to be truly neutral, to just be the context setter for the conversation of the heart. How do I know if it's an observation? Let me ask you this. How about if I say, she's having a temper tantrum? Is that a judgment or an observation?
Judgment.
Okay, why don't you turn to a person next to you and see if you can describe as an observation what would be a description of something we might call temper tantrum. Just turn to somebody next to you.
Screaming.
Mom is very loud.
Okay, let's hear a couple of these. I'm moving to the end so I can include the people back here. Let's hear from a couple of people in the back. Let's see.
Today I'm going to thinking about my son. He kind of falls down to the floor. He starts flaring his arms,
okay.
Kicking his legs.
Falls down to the floor, flailing his arms, kicking his legs. Does that sound like an observation?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, let's get another one.
Stomping their legs, screaming.
Okay, stomping their legs, screaming. Okay, screaming, most of us would probably agree, is an observation. And it's tricky because tones of voice are very culturally specific. When I was in this country only a few years, I used to have conversations with my mother, and I had roommates. And every time I got off the phone with my mother, my roommates would say, "What were you fighting about?" And so we weren't fighting, we're having an Israeli conversation. Okay, anyone else?
He's having a hard time staying seated for dinner.
Okay, how do you know he's having a hard time staying seated for dinner?
Well, I guess that was our question discussing, because I went more for looking at the feeling versus just what was physically happening.
Look first for just what's physically happening, because it's so easy to interpret. It's so easy to go right into the interpretation. So how do you know? What is he doing that lets you know he's having a hard time?
He's not sitting. He's off the chair. He's running around the table.
Those are the observations. Okay, is that clear now? It's harder than it first appears. It seems like it should be very obvious. Something that I find very helpful is to think about a video camera. If we had a video camera in this room, could it record crowded? No. Even though anyone looking afterwards at the film might say, the room looks crowded, the video camera itself makes no interpretation. It's completely culturally blank. So if you think about the video camera recording, it would just record the number of people in the room relative to its size, the number of chairs, things like that. Okay, so now if we've made a really clear observation, it's much more likely that we'll get a chance to go directly to the feelings and needs. This is where the heart of the conversation is. We make a second distinction at that moment then. When we talk about feelings, we try to distinguish between feelings and thoughts. Now again, it would seem completely clear. Of course we know what's the difference between a feeling and a thought. And yet, in common English language, the way that we speak, we tend to say things like this. I feel like this is really wrong. Is that a feeling? No. But 2 days ago, would you have said that's a feeling? Well, some people not, and some people would, because this is our habit of speech. It's not wrong in any way. It's just that we're using a different definition. How about this one? I feel manipulated. Yes, no. Okay, so this one is trickier. How many people here have ever felt abandoned? Would you raise your hand? Okay, if you look around the room, most of the people, we know what we mean. When you had the experience that either you thought someone was abandoning you or somebody actually left, how did you feel? Raise your hand and actually just call it out.
Scared.
Uncomfortable, scared,
sad.
Lonely.
Angry.
Devastated. Worthless. Devastated. Okay. So I'm going to take worthless for a minute. If you're thinking that you're worthless, how did you feel inside yourself? Because I would say worthless is a judgment of yourself. It's a thought about yourself. It's not an actual emotion. It's an interpretation of what's going on. So our words are riddled with interpretation even when we're describing feeling states. So we make a distinction between feeling words that describe just internal reality and feeling words that are mixed with thoughts or interpretations. And the second category, the feeling words mixed with thoughts and interpretations, is where we can get into a lot of confusion. Because if I tell you that I felt abandoned, and you were angry when you felt abandoned, and I felt bereft, those are very different reactions. So I'm not actually telling you what's going on in me. A second problem with the feeling words that are actually thoughts or interpretations is that I am still attributing responsibility to you. And I want to talk just about me. If I'm talking about my internal states, then I'm talking about me. if I'm saying abandoned, manipulated, left out, I'm actually talking about what you're doing. Yes.
This can be a little tough for those of us who have had those sheets of feelings, you know, that you can use in your language, because a lot of these words that you're mentioning that are mixed are on those.
Luckily, we have new feeling sheets. You can, you have them, you all got the parenting booklet in your packets. And some of you, I think, bought another one. Maybe you would be giving it to friends. But you those have a very brief selection of feeling words. On our website, you can download a lot more. And we keep revising them because we keep thinking more deeply about the meaning of words. Language is very powerful, and so we're really retraining ourselves as we think about what constitutes an internal state. Okay, then third, we talk about needs, and the distinction we make here is between what are our core human needs and what are the strategies we employ to get those needs met. Is it hard to see? I don't know what to do. Let me just put it out. Needs versus strategies is all it says here. So one of the most common strategies for getting needs met in the United States, and not only in the United States, is money. But money is not a need. Money is a strategy. If you have more access to money, what needs can you meet?
Hunger.
Okay. Hunger, you can meet your need for nutrition, for health. What else? Shelter. Security. Clothing. Okay, all of those are the needs that we have in common. If we found a different strategy that could as well meet our needs, in fact, probably better, then we would discover that money is absolutely not necessary as a strategy. It's actually a very tough way to get those needs met, because not everybody gets to have them met. Okay, lastly, number four, requests instead of demands, or instead of non-doable or vague requests. A lot of the reason that we don't get our needs met, I would say two reasons. Number one, we haven't identified what our needs are. As I said, we went from judgment to demand. So we don't know what we really need. And if we don't really know what we need, we don't ask for it. And then we don't get it. A second reason, which I think is equally important, is that we don't know what specific requests to make of people that would help them get our needs met. So if you think about it, in NVC, the request is the part where you are offering another person the opportunity to contribute to you. In that way, it's actually an opportunity for them to get a need of theirs met. Because giving to you is one way for them to meet their need for contribution. And if you think about children, how much they're eager, how much they're wanting to contribute, giving them ongoing opportunities from very early on to contribute to your well-being, not as a demand, not as a, not sucking it or forcing it, but just giving them opportunities to give you can be so delicious. How many people have read my mothering article? Okay, some. When that article came out, I got a copy about 2 weeks in advance of the publication date, and I wasn't expecting it. And I was in the middle of some play with my son, and the mail came, and for some reason I stopped the game in the middle and went to get the mail. This was uncharacteristic of me. I just must have had an intuition. I got the mothering article in the mail, and I was so excited. This was the first article that I had published. And it was a breakthrough for me because I love writing. I've always wanted to write. And I was so excited that so many people are going to get to hear about NVC without ever having to come to a workshop. So it very profoundly met my need for contribution to have it come out. So I was so excited, I was telling my son about it, and he said, "Oh, okay, let's come back to the play." And I said, no, you don't know, you don't understand. I'm so excited because now I'm going to get to contribute to so many people." And so now I had his attention, and I got filled with gratitude to him. So I said to him, "You know, I am so grateful to you. you have helped me so much. And he said, I have? I said, yes. And I reminded him of very specific things. If you remember what Marshall talked about, he said to make a very specific observation about the way the person contributed to you. So I reminded him of specific conversations where I learned something, things he had said to me, and I named two or three things, and I said, and in this way, I've gotten to learn and to grow, and now I get to give to other people. He put his arms around me, and we danced in the living room for 15 minutes. And the sense of celebration that he had of really seeing how he contributed to a very big need of mine was so amazing. So giving them that opportunity, let's give it to them. Okay, so this is it. Now you got the basics of NVC, and now I'd like you to practice them. So if you turn to page 3, you see the working with no part, but ignore that for right now. Right at the top, what I'm asking you to do is to take a few minutes with yourself to think about something that you have said to your child that you would rather say using NVC. You want to try out what would it be like. So, for example, a statement that you might have said to your child would be, no hitting. There's nothing wrong with that statement. I'm not trying to have you think about something awful that you've said to your child. Just something that you said that you'd rather see if you can discover. What are the feelings and needs underneath that statement? How could I say this and create more of a connection? So think of the original statement. And then I'd like you to translate it. Just based on what we did so far. Think about what is the observation. So before you get into it, I'm just wanting to walk through it with you. The way we usually phrase these, is in this form where we say, we begin with, when I see or hear, and we put the observation, I feel, because I need, would you be willing to? Again, I want to say the language is not the most important part of NVC at all, but it is very helpful. And so whenever I teach, I encourage people to go ahead and do it by the book. Do every single thing so you can train your heart with these kinds, with this consciousness, not just with these words. And then use the language that you are comfortable to. But see if you can add this so that over time you can really shift how you're responding in these situations. Did you have a question?
Yes, I do. If you're trying to encourage a behavior rather than to discourage a behavior, on the first thing where it says, when I see here, would that be a place where you would put what when they are doing the preferred behavior, you would remark on that observation? Okay, great.
Yes. Okay, so go ahead and work with your sheet for just a couple of minutes. And when you're done, turn to, if possible, a different person that's near you, maybe behind you, and share with them what you wrote. We'll just take a few minutes for this. Share what you wrote with someone near you. Even if you haven't finished, if you don't mind wrapping up your conversation and turning your attention back to the whole group. What I'd like you to do now, just quietly with yourself for a moment. Look at what you wrote for an observation and just check. Would a video camera be able to record this, or is there any interpretation in there? For example, she watches too much TV.
Too much value.
too much would be a value judgment, yes. So just watch out for those. There's a question. Just a moment.
It doesn't sound true.
What about if you make a statement when I see toys all over the floor? Would all over also be a judgment?
Well, if it's not really all over, it just feels like it's all over, then I would say that that part of it includes a judgment. It's hard for us, partly it's hard for us to clean up those interpretations and judgments because they're loaded. That's where the emotion seems to be. The good news is that we have a place for the emotion. So if you really take the interpretation out of that observation language, you'll discover that the emotion becomes very crystallized. Instead of subversively getting it into that original statement, now put it where it belongs, which is in expressing the feeling. So now check and look at the feeling words that you used and ask yourself, is there any interpretation in there of what the other person is doing to me, or is it completely my own, completely internal? These are really hard questions, actually. So just check. It'll be easier once you have the... actually, in your little booklets, there are feelings and needs sheets, so you can look at them for guidance. But
discouraged,
I would say, is a feeling, unless you're thinking that the other person is discouraging you. Okay, now, look at the needs. Look at the needs and ask yourself, is this really a deep universal need, or is this just what I want from you? Because this is an important thing that we try to distinguish, that our needs are big. Our needs are universal, they're ongoing, all of us share them. If it's something I want from you right now, if it's time-bound, person-bound, place-bound, it's probably a strategy. And this is probably the number one place that gets parents extremely frustrated, is that we really do want some relief. We want that compliance. Just do it. Please just do it. Can't you just do it? The just do it. Hold on.
The relief.
Is the relief a need?
Absolutely. This is part of why I think of this as a social change movement, because once we really connect at the level of needs, we recognize that there is no way our children can meet all of our needs. There is no way we can meet all of our children's needs. Our needs are much bigger than one person can meet. It's possible, and it is true, as many of you know, that the infant's nutrition needs can all be met by one person, but that's about it.
That's what I was sitting here wondering. Is it okay for us to ask a four-year-old for peace? You know, I need there to be peace in the family. Is that a realistic thing to ask?
Is it realistic to ask for peace from a four-year-old? Depends what you want to get back. If you're asking for something, you need it. So you're saying, I'm needing peace. But what is it that you're asking the four-year-old to do? What you're asking from the four-year-old is his or her particular slice of contribution to your peace. And the kind of attitude that I ultimately hope for from all of us, and this is a huge spiritual leap, is that we are really not locked into that person getting our need met. So that if developmentally or temperamentally at this particular moment or at this particular stage, that need is not likely to get met, we get relief in two ways. One is through a shift in our relationship with ourselves. That's one huge shift that NVC really encourages, by doing a lot of self-empathy, a lot of giving ourselves the understanding that we need that we don't get from other people. Let me ask you another raise your hand kind of question. How many people here have the experience that your need for understanding and for being heard is met sufficiently. Just look around the room.
Say it again.
That your need for understanding, for being heard, is met sufficiently. This is a crisis. You know, we're chuckling, but it's a crisis. Because this is a very core human need. So we get to do two things. One is that we get to give ourselves that understanding as a starting point. Not that this is the solution, but as a starting point. And the second is that I believe we have a huge task as a species right now, which is about building community. So I'm not going to really talk about that at all, but I just want to have that on the background, that this is one of the tasks at hand that is very challenging and where we need a lot of skills for communication to really create communities that help us meet our needs. But the second gift that we get here is that we get to offer our children the opportunity for real understanding and for being heard. So that if we look around the room of children growing up with NVC and we ask this question, do you have a sense that your need for understanding is really met? You're being understood in your life. I would like to see a room full of children going, yes. Even if we can't meet a lot of their other needs, that need is so core. And so much of the time, even if we don't get other needs met, we can get that need met through the quality of connection. I'll share with you a brief story that someone told me. It was a mom and her 1.5-year-old, and the 1.5-year-old reached her hand and grabbed her mother's face. And her mother says, "Oh, sweetie, when you do that, I feel scared. It doesn't meet my need for..." And the little one said, "Safety?" So maybe the mom's need for safety wasn't met, but was her need for empathy met? And this is, a lot of the time, much more important. Not than safety, usually, but than many other needs along the way. Many other things that we want cooperation around. If we really have understanding, a huge transition can happen. Here's a question back here.
Hi, I'm just wondering, when my son grabs my face like that, my instinctive reaction is to smack his hand away and say, "Ow, stop that." I'm not sure how to get through that mental transition to a point where I could take a split second to stop and think and say something nice instead of just smacking his hand away. How do you do that?
Not right away. This is not the first place to start. These kinds of questions always remind me of someone at an intro evening that I did said, well, we're about to get on the plane. Literally, they were leaving on the plane for a night flight that night. And if my son is kicking the person in front, I'm just not going to turn to them and say, "Sweetie, would you be willing to stop kicking the seat in front of you?" And I said, don't start in the roughest situations. Start with NVC in the places where you have the capacity to shift the dialogue, where you're really willing to have a conversation. Not in the places where you're really scared, you're really anxious, you're really angry. Those are probably not the first places. Then build your muscles, build your faith that it is possible to see a different kind of movement happening, and then approach these kinds of situations. And I can share with you that a couple of years ago, I had one of these moments where my son, I was on the phone trying to make flight arrangements for my mother. And you know how you get put on hold, and then 3 times my son just had to have my attention. And each time I actually hung up and had to start the whole thing over. So by the 3rd time, he's calling to me, "Ima! Ima!" Ima is mother in Hebrew. And I got from my seat where I was sitting in the study, and I felt, you know that wave of anger? And I'm walking towards the living room where he is, and I suddenly had that shift. That was not a decision where I had to think about it, where it just came to me. So for a long time, it's something you really work with internally until you find the place in your roughest spots. And for many of us, it's anger. and your roughest spots. We have very specific work that we do with MVC on anger in looking at how our judgments really create so much anger. And if we translate them into our needs, a lot of the anger shifts. So I moved from that amount of anger rising, it all completely drained. At the moment that I realized that I felt helpless and I needed support, it was that simple. I just felt terribly helpless and really wanted some support. And when I expressed that, that was not a problem. If I had expressed all that anger, that would have been a problem. That would have been it for the call for the day. Okay, a couple more questions.
In a worst case scenario, and you express your anger or have the PMS moment, what do you do afterwards?
How do you heal it? You express your feelings, needs, and make a request. So how do you feel after a moment like that? Hold on.
I feel a lot of regret.
Okay, what need of yours wasn't met by the way that you acted? If you can look inside and see what of your human needs wasn't met. Let me make a couple of guesses. I'm wondering if part of it is that you're really wanting to treat your child with gentleness and care. Compassion. And I'm also wondering if part of it is that you're wanting so much to live in line with your values.
I think that after an experience like that, I wish I could take it back.
Okay, so you express all that. And then check with your child how he's feeling or how she's feeling hearing that. And then you have a connection right then. There are studies that show that attachment, true attachment, is not about always having relationships that are peaceful and easy. It's about what happens when you have a break and how you reconnect from that break. And so children actually learn a lot more about attachment and relationship from how we heal breaks than from having none at all to begin with. So don't worry about having stuff like that. We're human. They're watching us. They're seeing, okay, human beings act this way. How do human beings work it out after? And this is where the biggest lesson they get to have. So I really, really don't believe there's any reason for us to be ever hard on ourselves with how we act, as long as we're willing to step back in and heal it. Face it together with them. Mourn it together with them. Okay, one more question and then I'd like to move to another exercise.
Would it be too judgmental to say, I need you to learn respect versus I need your respect?
Is this at the need? At the need part? Okay, at the need part, what I would encourage you to do is to make the need very broad and general. I need respect. Then at the request part, see what you would like from her or him. Him. What you would like from him. This is the part where you get to really challenge your creativity. Because, as I said before, much of why we don't get our needs met is because we're not clear on what it is exactly we want. So in the request part, tell him what respect looks like for you. How would he help you meet your need for respect?
Because it's not only me who needs respect. I need him to learn how to respect. It's not only me who needs respect, but I want to tell him that I want him to learn how to respect others.
Okay, so it's not just respect for you as an individual. It's that we want respect for everyone. That's a need. So I want respect for everyone. Now, I still want to know, what can he do that would meet your need for respect for everyone? And for each of you, it might be different. Just like in some cultures, eye contact shows respect, and in other cultures, eye contact is interpreted as disrespect. So be very specific about your individual cultural expectations. If you want respect, what can your child do that would help you meet that need? Okay, so I'd like now to have you imagine that you just said this to your child. And most likely, if your child is as healthy as most children I know, they will say no. Why do they say no so readily? Because they are, let's see.
Because they have a need for autonomy, especially when they're little.
That matches my experience with children. Matches my experience with all human beings. Pretty much, whenever we are given a choice and we think that it's not a real choice, we will either rebel or submit. And most children I know are on the rebellion side. I know very few children that go along with things. Do any of you have one?
I have one.
You have one?
One of each.
One of each, yeah, one of each. Okay, so that's a different challenge. With children that go along, then you want to really nurture. So they're really meeting their need for cooperation, for peace, for harmony. What about their need for autonomy and for trust, that their needs really matter and that they can have a voice? So we nurture that. But for all of those children whose need for autonomy is just throbbing, they want to make all the decisions and they want things to go their way. I have one of those. Then the task is just like when you're nursing a baby. Your baby needs milk. You don't doubt that, right? Your baby needs that nutrition. You give it. And yet we think so differently when they get into the toddler years and into the preschool years. It's like we don't see that the needs that they have are just different, but they're still needs. This is still a need. And so our parenting task is identical, which is to try the best that we can to get their needs met without sacrificing ourselves, our own needs, the needs of other people. Even when you're breastfeeding, you can't sacrifice your own body, you know, because you won't have the milk for the child. And so as a parent of a toddler or a preschooler or any age child, or as a partner with another person, don't sacrifice yourself. Don't make the child's needs more important. Find a way to nurture yourself to get your needs met, but also focus on how do I orient myself to meeting needs for this child as much as possible? How can I create an environment where, for the most part, she or he will have as much of her need for autonomy met as possible within the bounds of safety? And then in the places where it's not, because, see, life is not about always meeting needs. It's about trying to meet needs. Then we also need skills for when our needs are not met. And those are some of the skills that you can help your child learn. When your needs are not met, how do you handle the emotional intensity of that experience? And part of that is that you model that for them. How do you handle it when your needs are not met? Okay, so they're going to say no because they're checking out. How are human beings? What are human beings like? How can I have things that I want? What does it mean to get along in the world? Can we get all of our needs met? All of these lessons are encapsulated in this powerful two-letter word. And so imagine that they say no. And here is probably one of the most core, powerful transition moments in NVC. How many people here like hearing no? Just raise your hand. So look around the room. I really want you to see the number of hands. I really like to change that. I'd like all of you to walk out of here waiting for the next no. Why? Because in NVC, no is just the beginning of a dialogue. That's all it is. It's an opportunity for honesty and for connection. If all I'm getting is a yes, I don't have the chance to find out about you, to find out about your needs, to find out about whether we're really meeting both of our needs. And so if you say no to me, this is my opportunity to open my mouth with the empathy question. I'm going to try to guess why you're saying no to me. Why on earth would somebody say no to such a lovely request? I'm putting my heart out. Why won't you come towards me? Let's find out. And I can find out by inquiring into your feelings and needs. Now, if your child is not verbal and they're not going to tell you what their feelings and needs are, I would still say at least some of the time verbalize your guesses, because this is how they will get emotional vocabulary, emotional literacy. And so even with a very young child, I want to try to make a guess. But I can also make this guess in my own individual head. I don't have to know the right answer. All I'm doing by making an empathy guess is that I'm making you human to me. instead of hearing no, I'm hearing a human being saying yes to something else. Now, I'd like to model this to you with the puppets for a moment, if I could get you to hold this for me.
Yes. And you're speaking, so I need to hold you in your mouth.
Yes.
maybe if you come from this side.
There's going to be puppets.
Giraffe ears.
Okay, if you can put it on my mouth. I'm going to start. Okay, so we talk about having four ways of hearing in NVC. And this is the first and probably most culturally favorite way of hearing, which is with jackal ears out. Now, there's nothing wrong with jackal. There's nothing wrong with me. Why are you saying to everybody that something's wrong with me? Oh, excuse me, did you hear me say that? Well, not really, but I was interpreting. All that jackal means really is the language of our habits. The language of our habits, the problem with it, is that it's not meeting our needs. That's all. When we speak in judgments and demands, nobody's needs get met. This is fine, whoever's child this is. It's totally fine for her to take the puppets. So in the language of our habits, we tend very easily to hear in judgments. This is not what we say to people, but what we think. Everything I'm going to do with the ears is just what I'm thinking, not what I'm saying. Okay, is that clear? Okay, somebody tell me something that's hard for you to hear that your child says to you.
How come you don't do anything? We have to do everything.
Okay, so your child says to you... I hope you're getting empathy through our laughter. Okay, the child says, how come you don't do anything and we get to do everything around here? So if I have my jackal ears pointing outward, this is what I'm hearing. This is what I'm thinking. What a brat! I can't believe this child is talking to me like this. This is just awful. What a terrible, terrible thing to say. And how come he can't see? What, is he blind? So I can go on and on and on in judgment land. And meanwhile, I'm getting angrier and angrier. Now, some of us are also very well versed in the jackal ears inward. And this is when we judge ourselves. So if I hear the same statement... How come you don't do anything and we get to do everything around here? Oh my God, I'm just a failure as a mother. I just don't know what I did wrong. I thought I really taught my children to be more considerate than that. And oh God, I better go to therapy. Or conference. Okay, this might not be the way your jackal ears work, but for most of us, there's some version of this anger or depression. Judgment of you, judgment of me. You're wrong, I'm wrong. You're bad, I'm bad. And meanwhile, life is getting pretty miserable. And this is how most of us live. This is really how we live most of the time, in judgment out, judgment in, judgment out, judgment in. So this is the miracle of these ears, and I want to encourage you to really use this symbol. I find it extremely helpful to think about just putting the giraffe ears on. So if I put the giraffe ears on inward, then this is what we call self-empathy. Instead of judging myself, I'm inquiring with myself. I'm basically opening my heart to myself by asking, how am I feeling? What am I needing? And so in this case, it might go something like this. How come you don't do anything around here and we have to do everything? Oh, wow. I'm feeling so discouraged. I really want to be seen for the contribution that I make. Does that fit for you? Yeah. There's a tremendous gentleness and sweetness in just having this self-connection. We're not only lacking in being heard and being seen by others, we're lacking it with ourselves. So when I think about what is most important to me in life, there's a huge part that's just about contribution and what I want to give and my child and family and the world and all of that. But there's something that is core, which is my relationship with myself. I want to have the quality of relationship with myself where I understand my needs. I can look in and I know what need is going on. I'm looking in and I can tell, what am I feeling? And many people, after they practice this for a little while, start to notice that just this process of shifting into the inner needs makes a profound difference in their state of being. So this is sort of like an anger reduction moment. Then I can choose, how do I want to respond? Now let me demonstrate the last ear station, which is with the giraffe ears outward. And with the giraffe ears outward, I get this very funny skill, which is that I both listen really well, but hear nothing. What do I mean by that? Listen really well, but hear nothing. I mean that when I hear this, how come you don't do anything around here and we have to do everything? I don't hear that. Because if I heard that, I would get really mad. What I'm hearing instead is, I wonder if she's feeling really frustrated. And she'd really like more choice about what she's doing with her time. That's all. That doesn't mean I have to agree or disagree, do something different. All I'm doing is trying to tune into the heart that's behind that particular expression. When I see that, then I see this humanity here. Just a human being trying to meet her or his needs. Then I can have a choice. So I can say either, boy, when you just said that, I felt so discouraged. I really want to be seen for the contribution that I make. Would you be willing to tell me if there's anything you noticed me doing in the last week? I don't want to tell you anything. Okay, now again I have a choice. I could either express myself some more, or I can go into empathy. If my child says, I don't want to tell you anything, then what might be the child's feelings? What do you think?
He doesn't get hurt.
So if he's thinking, I don't get heard, what might the feeling be? Okay, someone's saying anger, sadness, frustration. What, and the need? So one would be to be heard. Anything else? What might be a need?
To be left alone and continue playing what he was playing.
Okay, so to be left alone, again, is in the realm of autonomy. And choice. I want focus on my play. Okay. I saw a hand raised over there. Yes?
Sad.
Could you come a little closer?
I mean scared.
Your question.
Scared.
That might be a feeling. Yes, absolutely. That can be a feeling that the child is experiencing. And if I'm guessing that the child is scared or sad or angry or whatever it is I'm guessing, I have the opportunity to actually connect with them. So how do you think, I don't know if everybody's seen, but there's a little baby here. How do you think the baby's feeling right now?
Happy.
What need is she meeting?
Exploring.
Okay, it's so easy to see when it's that. It's so hard to see when it's a child grabbing a toy from another child. But they're just as human. So this is the task for us. So now what I'd like you to do is, having imagined that the child said no, I want you to turn to the next exercise. Do you mind if I look at yours for a moment? And you'll see at the top some keys. I've talked about some of them. But what I'd like you to do is just fill in A and B. How do you feel? And what need of yours do you notice when you hear the no? Because most of us have strong feelings about hearing no. And then second, what do you imagine your child feels? And what need is he or she trying to meet by saying no to you? Okay, there's a question, but I'm not moving yet because I'm...
Do you want us to answer with giraffe ears or giraffe ears?
Answer with giraffe ears, meaning really look for the feelings and needs. Look for the feelings and needs. And again, we'll just take a minute. Okay, I'd like to see, I just noticed there's just 15 minutes left, and I would really love a whole day with you all. But given that there's 15 minutes late, could I just see a show of hands, how many people have questions they want to ask? Okay, so a number. Okay, let me take one question right now, and then I want to do another short activity, and then take the rest of the questions. Here we go.
This information is so new to me that I'm just really having trouble even applying it and identifying the needs that you're asking us to identify. For instance, I wrote...
put it closer to
me. Oh, closer, okay. I wrote that when I hear no, I feel frustrated, and that my need for cooperation is not being met. Is that an appropriate need? That's an appropriate expression of a need?
That matches my understanding of need. And the reason I'm saying that matches my understanding is because one of the things that I'm really trying to move away from is creating another system of right speech and wrong speech. I really don't want that. What I'd like you to do is just go for the deepest need you can recognize. Get your hands on that list. Get your hands on the book if you can. And by the way, if people went and tried to buy it and it was gone, I actually brought some more. So there's more materials now again in the bookstore. And work with them and just keep learning and refining and going deeper with it. But don't worry so much if it's right or wrong, because the important thing, again, is not the language. It's your intention. It's opening your heart, really trying not to get the thing from your child, but to invite your child to help meet your needs. Is that it? Okay, go ahead.
I was having trouble with the first example, too, and she wants to know what you think about it, too, so we're going to ask one more really quick. My children were bickering in the store. Bickering is a judgment, so I tried to observe what was happening. I said, when I hear you disagreeing with your sister in public, I feel worried. What I wrote first was, I feel worried that others will be disrupted in their shopping, which is really only a sub-feeling. The real feeling is, I'm worried they're going to think that I don't train my children, right? Okay, I finally got honest. I'm worried that they're going to think I don't have a peaceful family and I'm a bad mother.
Yeah.
And I said, and then I really just got stuck. I couldn't identify the need. I said, I finally went with this. I need my children to behave well in a store. And would you be willing to change your behavior?
So I don't recognize a universal need called, I want my children to behave well in a store. But I recognize that as a universal experience. What's the need? What do you think the need is? All the way in the back. Acceptance. Okay, someone else said respect.
Cooperation.
Peace.
Compassion.
Okay, there's all sorts of things that I would recognize at the need level. Now, here we get, this is why, I said, and I keep saying this, it's a spiritual practice. We get to say, okay, I'm feeling really nervous. I've got this huge need for acceptance that's coming up right now. Do I want to act on the basis of that need? Do I want to try to meet that need, and in what way? This is part of where learning to develop and deepen our relationship with ourselves is so juicy. We get choice. Instead of just going, what are they going to think about me? Knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to treat my children in the way that I don't want.
So I can choose to leave the store. Children choose not to stop doing that.
Okay, so she can choose to leave the store if they choose not to stop. She can choose all sorts of things. You can spend the rest of the time in the store in self-empathy. Oh boy, I'm really embarrassed now. Oh, I really would like acceptance. Oh boy, now I'm feeling really frustrated and I'd like more cooperation. Oh, just empathy, self-empathy, self-empathy. And move away a little bit from gotta act. Gotta act. There's no compulsion to take quick action unless your child is running to the street or somebody else is in danger in some other way. Give yourself a little room to really explore your reactions, to take the time to choose what you want to do next. And then consider sharing this with them. Tell them, when you guys are talking to each other at this tone And in the things that you're saying to each other, I feel really uncomfortable because I would like to be accepted by people, and I also would like you to be accepted by people. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to stop talking to each other for a moment and take a moment to cool down, and then we'll talk about this when we come out. Would you be willing to do that? This sounds so simple now that I said it, doesn't it? Okay, then they said no. Now, here's parenting. This is not an NVC parenting tip, but I think it's a very important parenting tip. You do not have to resolve every issue in the moment. Pick your battles. Think about what you're going to talk all the way through, when and where. And choose times when you're already connected to talk about things that are particularly hard, especially that are the patterns that keep happening day in and day out. Somehow I think I have a mental block about talking about things that happen regularly because I'm only noticing them when they're happening, and then I don't want to think about them the rest of the time. Yeah, a lot of people are nodding. Try to think about them at a different time when your child is receptive to talking about it and you're receptive to talking about it. So then you have more of an opportunity for connection. Okay, one more question.
I'm a teacher, and I have a lot of parents who try to use these things. And sometimes I can understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I mean, why with the grocery store type example, why wouldn't you say, you know, if you continue to act like this, then we're going to need to leave the store, and then give them a chance. And if they continue to act like that, just say, I'm sorry, that's a choice you made. We're going to leave. Instead of trying to reason with a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, because I don't know that they, and because, anyway, I think you understand my question.
Yeah, so why not just give them a choice and then...
On the way home instead of... I don't understand. I guess I'm not...
Yeah, why would you have a whole dialogue? Well, you wouldn't necessarily with a 3 and a 4-year-old. So let me get... elaborate on this a little bit because I think it's a really important question. If you're going to do something like that, here's what I would prefer that you did. I would prefer that you said to them, I'm so uncomfortable. I really want to take care of myself right now, and so I'm going to take us all out the door. There is no need to leave the room. There is no, there's nothing wrong with what they're doing, and I would like them not to have that implication that there's something wrong. Just that I'm so uncomfortable, and I don't know how to deal with this in a different way. Why? Because I think more than you're teaching them by more than they can learn about what they're doing with each other, or what they'll learn from rules that you set, they're going to learn and practice, basically, conflict resolution skills from a really early age based on how honest you are about your own feelings and needs and how much you're really trying to connect with theirs. And so even it doesn't mean that you have to dialogue about everything, but that you're upfront about why you're doing the things that you're doing without any implication of wrongness on their side. It's just basically the limitation of my skills when I can't handle something like that in a way that I'm satisfied with. I'm not so satisfied with my answer. I'm just at the moment concerned about the time, and so I'm shortening it because I'm guessing that we have another 8 minutes.
Yeah.
8 minutes. Okay. So let me say one more thing about it. I think one of the biggest questions for a lot of parents, especially parents who have multiple children, is the doability, the manageability. How the heck am I going to do this? And I don't have an easy solution for you. The biggest thing I can say is that I think it's time very, very well invested, both in terms of the trust and connection between you and your child. It's a different quality of relationship when you have the adult as the decider or the rule maker and the judge, and the adult as a human modeling humanity for you. This is a different model of parenting. And I don't subscribe to the authority model. I do think we know more. Of course we know more. We have been around for a long time. We have skills. Our brains work differently. We have a lot of knowledge, a lot of life experience, and we want to share it. But our children will receive it differently if we offer it as a gift than if we use it to have power over them. This question of power over versus power with is one of the most challenging questions in our human society right now. So if I want to have a different paradigm in our society where children are growing up with skills to have power with, then I want to model that someone who is bigger, who has more skills, who has more knowledge, can share power, that they don't have to use power over. In fact, that I have more resources for dealing with my emotions than they do. And so I want to expect more of me than of them in this regard. So this is what I really want as much as possible for our children, to watch us struggle to grow into our full-fledged humanity so they have this amazing model of what it means to be a human being in our society and what our society can look like if we really, truly share power. I hope that was like a huge topic that I just opened up. And there was a hand there for a while. I don't know where.
Okay. So I'm wondering, in relation to the other woman's question, in this philosophy or this thought process, is there ever any type of undesirable behavior that couldn't be tolerated?
There's tons of undesirable behavior that can't be tolerated. So all I'm asking is, let's be honest, that I'm just not able to tolerate it, instead of saying that it's bad or wrong. That's all. That's a really big difference.
I guess I just wonder how well this works when most of his playmates don't have this vocabulary and this way of interacting. Most of the adults that he works with and is around don't have this vocabulary and this way of dealing with him. I mean, it's like I'm one person in a, you know, wild storm of just say no, just do it, just, you know, give me the toy, just, or whatever. How well can this work? I mean, I'm just one person.
Yeah, you're just one person, and I'm hearing a couple of things. One is that you feel overwhelmed and you're really needing support, and that you're also feeling lonely and wanting more companionship in having the kind of parenting that you want.
I would like him to be tools, but I wonder.
I would love for my son to have these tools, but I wonder how much of an impact. I mean, I'm his mother, so I probably have more pull than other people, but still, when everybody else is of the, you know.
It's like swimming against the tide.
It is. It's like swimming against the tide. Nobody else is doing it this way. So is he going to really take this to heart? Is he really going to be able to learn this when that's not the way that our society does things, by and large?
Yeah, so this is part of the dilemma that I think many of us are in, because when we try to parent differently, we're in incredible isolation. So I think about the women who started breastfeeding before it, again, you know, it became a wave. And I'm hoping that this is a new wave. And I think it is within the range of a trend of different kinds of parenting. And it's on a more radical side. It's sort of more on a social change and spiritual side than a lot of other parenting. So this kind of parenting is not really focused on discipline. You've never heard me say the word discipline, right? I don't think in terms of discipline. I think in terms of relationship and connection. And then I think the relationship and connection come instead of discipline. Is this time? Right. Let me just complete this question and then I'll do this. Okay, so that's one part of the answer, is that I do hope it will become a wave. And in order for that to happen, think as social change agents. Think about getting yourself a buddy. We also have an NBC parenting email group that is international, and you can all join that group. And that's
wonderful.
It's wonderful, yeah. It's meeting a lot of needs for people, for learning and also for support. I am really regretting to end. Oh, there were a couple of things that I wanted to share. Are any of you local to the Bay Area? Okay, for those who are local or who know anyone in the conference who is, I'm actually doing a day-long workshop in about a week.
So if you can, if you want to take one or pass it around to people you know, bring it to your children's preschool. Just take some and pass them back. That would be great for spreading the word. The website is cnvc.org. It's in the newsletter. And the local website is BayNVC, BayNVC.org. And I want to share with you right at this moment, looking at the number of people, looking at that you sat in these narrow chairs, in my opinion, for this hour and a half and gave me your attention, that I feel really grateful. Because in sharing this, I am very, very much meeting my own need for contribution, and you're making that possible for me. So thank you.